Welcome to We Are One, the podcast all about bringing people together from all religions and spiritual belief systems. My name is Emma, I am the host, and this is the pilot episode. So for today, it's going to be just me, but usually there will be someone here that I am interviewing about their religion or spiritual beliefs and spiritual journey. But since it's just the pilot, today I'm going to be telling you guys about my spiritual beliefs and my spiritual journey. So if you're not interested in that, might as well just wait till next week. Also, side note, I don't know if there are any other things out there titled We Are One, and so there's a chance that that might not be what this is called when you're listening to it, and if that's the case, I apologize. But for now, it's called We Are One. And yes, I did just do finger guns when I said that. So, I don't really have a title of my spiritual belief system. I kind of call it DIY spirituality, or do-it-yourself, because what it really has been me just becoming more self-aware and getting to know myself and my beliefs over the past couple of years. I will say there's one religion I very strongly resonate with. Like, I think a lot of their core beliefs really line up with mine, and that is called Baha'i, Baha'i, I think. And but I just found out about this religion, so I haven't really, I'm not a part of that community, and I don't necessarily identify as that, but I do really identify with a lot of their beliefs. Yeah, I believe we're all connected, primarily. That's the most important part of my belief system, is that we are all one consciousness, and that we are kind of like, currently, we used to be one big ball of light, and then we split into a million pieces, and those little pieces are our souls. And I believe that ball of light is what a lot of people call God, and or higher power, or source, or divine energy, or spirit, all these things. I think that essence, God, source, whatever, is the essence that our souls are made of. Essentially, all of us are God. We are all creators, and we are all creating our realities around us, mostly unconsciously. Except a lot of people are starting to become self-aware and manifest their realities consciously. But for the most part, I believe that people are God, unintentionally manifesting things because they don't realize they're God. Creating, they don't realize that they have creative power, which we do. Like, that's kind of the, all life has creative power. All life creates more life, which kind of like makes sense to me. So I believe that I believe in reincarnation. I believe we like choose what kind of life we want to live beforehand, and we choose what kind of lessons we want to learn in that life, and what kind of like experiences we want to have to grow for whatever purpose, or what kind of causes we want to make a difference in, or whatever. That's what I think karma is. So if you ever hear me talk about karma, I don't mean that like you deserve your abusive childhood because you were a horrible person in your last life. I think that ideology is a little toxic. I just think karma means it's the lessons that it feels like you don't have a choice now because you're unconscious, but you chose all these lessons. You pre-selected them for yourself ahead of time. And I believe in soulmates. I believe that's part of our karma too, is like soulmates are souls that we agreed to meet up with here for whatever reason, usually to learn lessons, or to support each other, or to trigger each other's trauma. That is what soulmates do a lot, is just reflect trauma back at each other so that you have to actually deal with your trauma. So anyone who's changed your life in a really good or a really bad way, in any kind of way, is probably a soulmate. And I don't believe in, like, the whole, like, you have one soulmate and that's supposed to be, like, your one person for your whole life. But I do believe that you have a billion soulmates, and like your inner family is probably all your soulmates. Those are really firm relationships y'all agreed to have before you came here. Like your parents and your siblings and that kind of stuff. So yeah, and that's the thing that I really like about the Baha'i faith, is that it's very centered around, like, a global community, like a global human race. It's not, like, we need to put that, our priority should be the entire collective of humanity, and I agree with that. Trying to think about what more of my spiritual beliefs I have that I can tell you guys about. I believe that, I mean, this is kind of, I don't know how spiritual this is. I believe that love and hate are the same thing, that they're just like, it's the same energy. You're just kind of like going, I guess it's a spectrum. It's the same, it's one energy that is a spectrum with love on one side and hate on the other. But it's kind of like picture like an uppercase U. It's kind of like that, with love on the, like, at the top of the left side and hate at the top of the right side. They're equal. Like, you see, if you move up and down them, it's equal. It's just like two opposite sides of the same thing. And the real enemy is not hate, it's fear. Like, fear is the real opposite of love. It's not fear is the real enemy. Fear is the only enemy. I believe that fear is the only enemy any of us have. So that being said, the way that I believe you, well, I guess in a lot of my mental health and whatnot, like, a big part of my spirituality has been dealing with my fears. And the first step in that is loving them, accepting them for what they are. And then you bring them into the light. But so a big part of my spirituality has been self-exploration, getting to know myself, figuring out what I actually do believe and what I actually don't believe. That part, a lot of that stuff kind of came naturally to me. Like, there's a lot of things that I've just always believed, and I don't know why. It just makes sense to me. But also, there is a big part of, like, you get to know your inner God, you get to know your inner light, your inner ability to put kindness and compassion into the world. At the same time, you get to know your inner shadow, your inner fears and traumas and your pain and your jealousy and your bitterness and your, all, you know, your regrets, all of these things that hold you down, hold you back. But the thing is, when the light and the dark are separate, it's like unconscious. You don't know that those things, those traumas and pains and regrets and fears, you don't know that they're manifesting in your reality, and you don't know how they're, like, popping off and affecting you and what things they are creating, until you accept them for what they are, and then you love them, and then you bring them into the light, and kind of, instead of becoming two parts, you just kind of become whole. And which, it's a process of, it's not like you just do that with your darkness once and you're good. Like, there's always going to be more stuff to deal with, but but then once you, like, bring it into the light and you love them and you see them, they're no longer creating, like, They're no longer manifesting in your life because you loved your fears. Like, you were doing the healing, so it's not going to bring you any more pain or harm at that point. You'll just have to deal with, like, the habits that you have from those destructive thoughts or whatever, and getting rid of that habit at that point. And yeah, I believe in, like, I really love witchcraft. I really love, it's a practice. It doesn't have to do with the devil. It has to do with mostly, like, when you, like, really do the research and find the roots of witchcraft, which is paganism and druidism, and similar to a lot of, like, indigenous cultures around the world, how their belief systems are really just about you and nature, and, like, the cycles of nature, and where you take, how you play a role in that. You know, there's, like, a birth and a death process in our nature cycle every spring and every fall. Like, birth and death is always repetitive in nature, the same way that I believe that it is in our lives. And yeah, I feel like at this point in my life, I feel a very strong connection to nature, and that is a very big part of my spirituality. I need to spend time outside to be grounded. And I feel like the presence of Source or God or the higher power spirit when I'm in nature very strongly. So yeah, I practice divination. I read tarot cards and use a pendulum, and I read the I Ching, which is from China, and I read numerology charts for people, and I know a little bit about astrology, but astrology is just really complex. And I think those things are useful for, they're like tools, really. Like, whenever I use tarot cards, I'm communicating with my higher self, who, like, sometimes can communicate with a spirit, or sometimes it's just I'm me talking to my higher self, but sometimes it's like I'm, you know, asking God or that higher power for the answers or whatever. But the cards just act as it's like a tool for you to use your subconscious. Your higher self is the one getting the messages and then relays them to your subconscious, who is selecting the cards that are going to come out while you're shuffling, using the minute muscles in your hands that you were never aware that you, like, the really tiny muscle movements that you are never aware that you're making are done by your subconscious. So I really love those tools too. So I guess, I don't know, have a whole lot to say about my own spiritual beliefs, but I would like to talk a little bit about my journey and how I got here. So I'm from a small town in East Texas. I grew up not there, like, that's where I'm from, but I grew up in a kind of more liberal, diverse college town, and but with my mom, my dad remained in the small town, so I grew up in both places, kind of had this, I have a Gemini moon, so for those of you that know about astrology, I had this very Gemini moon double life childhood of, I learned really young how to just, like, I'm a Pisces sun, so I'm very mutable, which I can kind of fit into whatever circumstances or environment is around me very easily and naturally, but I learned at a very young age to kind of, like, section off myself and, like, okay, while I'm here, I can show, like, these parts of myself and my personality. And while I'm here, I can show these parts of myself and my personality. And at a very young age, I started I was never fully myself, because I was always just like whatever little pieces of it I thought were going to be accepted. And I grew up in a church in this, a Southern Baptist church in this small town that I have been going to since I was an infant in the nursery. And I was very spiritual as a child. I'm a highly sensitive person, or an empath, which, if you don't know what that means, it just means that I am perceptive to energies and spirits and like other people's energies and emotions and like the energies and emotions of the things around us, that like the spirits that you don't see, that kind of stuff. I'm very sensitive to it. And when I was really little, I would talk to Jesus all the time. I felt his presence very strongly, and I just decided to get saved one day when I was like 4 or 5. I was by myself getting ready to go to sleep. It was late at night. I was sitting in my bed by myself, and I just decided to ask Jesus into my heart because I just felt like it, I guess. And it felt wonderful, and I really did feel his presence, and I've still can say that I love Jesus and that I am confident that Jesus like was with me. Like, if you ask him to, he's a very, whatever religion you are, whether you're Christian or not, Jesus is a loving, kind, powerful energy that will come to you if you ask, and it will not if you don't. So I was very spiritual. I really felt Jesus, but I really did not like going to church because I was so anxious. And I think that I would pick up on the anxieties of a lot of the adults around me as a really small child. Like, in church environment, that particular church, I think that there probably was a lot of anxiousness and stuff that I was picking up on. And my favorite part of church was the singing part, like the songs, the worship songs. That's when I felt God. I never really felt the Spirit of God while I was being talked at or while I was, you know, having to go around and smile and shake everyone's hand or whatever. But the singing part I loved. And so it was pretty spiritual, whatever. Let's get to the interesting part of my life, which is when I was in the 5th grade, my brother got schizophrenia. He joined the military, went to boot camp, and while he was there, got schizophrenia. I don't know how that all that works. I don't want to, like, who he may have had it slightly, like, a predisposition for it beforehand or whatever. But he came home, he got discharged and sent to a mental hospital and then was sent home. And then I had a schizophrenic older brother for a while. He was 10 years older than me. And so I was like a kid. I was in the 4th or 5th grade. And that time period was pretty wild. It's when I started disassociating and started, I was really empty, and I'm not gonna lie, the period of time where, like, living with Dylan with schizophrenia, all of my memories are really foggy, of that period of time, I think, because I was just not there. Like, I was not there. I was physically there, but I wasn't there. I wasn't retaining any of it or paying attention or being a part of it. I spent a lot of time climbing the tree in the front yard. And then when I was 12 in 2010, my brother went to a rehab center for like over the summer, for like 3 months, and he made a lot of progress, was a lot more healthy, doing really good, and opened up to my mom about a lot of things in that time, about his experiences and whatnot. And then when it came time for our insurance to be like, oh, yep, you've reached your limit of how much we'll pay for it, he went to a halfway house. And then that is when he, I guess, relapsed and all the voices came back and whatnot. And I'm pretty sure that he was only at that halfway house for like a couple of weeks or like a month, like at the max. I don't think it was a full month at all. And he committed suicide. And I disassociated even harder. I remember I barely cried when I found out. Like, I cried once when I found out, and I just, like, didn't cry again. I cried once when I found out, once at the funeral, and that was, like, I don't know if I cried for, like, a month after that. 'Cause I was just really, I had as a survival coping mechanism, I had shut out all that emotion, which I face it later in my life. And I can tell you that at 12 years old, had I felt the grief and the survivor's guilt that I actually contained inside of me, I would have been swallowed whole. Like, there's no way that 12-year-old me could have handled, like, any of that. So I blocked it all out, focused on my social life and being really busy and having fun and talking to my friends, because that's what you do when you are 12 and experience things like that, I guess. And then I went to church camp that summer, youth camp, and it was on the last day there, on the way back. I had a great time at youth camp, whatever. On the way back, of course, there's a boy that I liked at youth camp, and on the way back, we were holding hands on the church bus, and he said something to me or asked me something, I don't know what it was, and I started crying, and he just started praying for me instantly. And then after I calmed down, he like asked me what had happened or whatever, and I told him, and I talked to him. He was the first person that I ever really talked about. Like, my friends knew that my brother had died, but he was the first person that I'd ever really talked about my emotions, talked about my brother, and cried. And, like, the first time I was able to really feel those feelings was with him on this church bus. And so then after that, I got really, really, really way more into Christianity, even though I was still really, like, numb and empty. It was like, I honestly just felt like I was trying and working so, so hard to be as spiritual and religious and as Christian as I could, to just feel anything. And it really didn't work that well. Sometimes during worship, I would feel God and, like, be able to kind of feel my emotions a little bit, but I was still really numb for a long time. But I had a church at where I lived in the, like, with my mom, and at this time, and then the church that I grew up in, and my dad's. So I was going to two churches throughout the rest of middle school and high school. And, okay, it wasn't just my brother that died. There were more people in my family. He was the first one in 2010. And then I have jokingly called this decade in my life the decade of death, from 2010 to 2020, because I experienced a lot of death and grief in that decade, from within my family and with outside of my family and my friends and my mom's family friends. Like, it was just everywhere, and I was just numb and empty. And I got sidetracked for a moment there. I was numb and empty until I went on a mission trip to Panama. It was the first time I'd ever left the country, and I was there for a whole month, and I can genuinely say that trip, like, saved my life. I've felt feelings. I felt so many things. I fell in love with that culture, and I fell in love with like just experiencing cultures that weren't mine. And I felt like I'm gonna be a mission. I feel called to be a missionary for my career, which really wasn't true. I just wanted to travel. I mean, I didn't know what thoughts in my own head were really mine or not mine then. So I really didn't know this until I started traveling outside of mission trips. But I really just fell in love with traveling the world and experiencing those other cultures and people and beautiful, beautiful places. I will say, I was taught how to manifest on that mission trip. We were praying every single morning very intensely that we would encounter people who needed to hear what we had to say for whatever reason. And like every day it was something crazy was happening and someone was coming up to us with some crazy story about how I was on my way to kill myself and then I saw you guys doing your Jesus drama and now here we are crying and talking to each other and I'm not gonna kill myself. Like, it, I now personally don't agree with going into other countries to spread my own beliefs into their cultures. I'd honestly rather go and just like look at their cultures and their beliefs and see if I think any of that shit's true than the other way around. But we were being taught how to manifest. I really do think that mission trip organization was doing and is doing like really good things in the world because they really, really, they call it seeking souls. They pray for seeking souls, which is like, yeah, the people that we talk to on those mission trips were in really dark places. They really needed something. And what we had to give them was, like, what they needed, you know? So it was really beautiful and, like, really, really beautiful trip. When I came back, though, I felt just as numb, if not more numb, than beforehand. There was like a lot of fuck shit happening at the church that we had went down while we were gone on the trip that we didn't know about because we didn't have our phones. There's like a small group of us from the church that had gone with this organization to various locations in the world. So also while I'm having these really Christian experiences and like developing in that religion, I was having these like paranormal experiences with my brother, and like for the first couple of years after his death he would flicker the lights in our house all the time, and not like one light but like random lights, and it wouldn't just be at random times either. It'd be either when we were talking about him or when we were, if my mom and I, if one of us was being mean to the other one, or if we were like sad, it'd be one of those three. Talking about Dylan, being mean to each other, or if we were sad, he would come in and like flash the lights in whatever room we were in. And then my mom got recommended a psychic, like a medium by one of her friends, and she went, and this lady, like, my mom was like, I'd like to speak to my son. And this lady was like, oh, was he 6'5" and wore his hat like this every single day and had schizophrenia and got hit by a car? And just started like spitting out all these details about him. And my mom was just, my mom, I wasn't there for it, but we were both really shocked. And then she talked to him and he told my mom about what his experience was like from the other side. And so I was having, and there were like I was having some paranormal experiences at the same time that were kind of like widening my views of what is possible, I guess, at the same time as very numbingly throwing my entire being into Christianity. So then I went to a mission trip to Mexico over the Christmas break, and when I came back, I found out that my friend Jordan had passed away. He was the guy from the church camp when I was in seventh grade that held my hand and prayed with me. And so he died when I was in the 10th grade. And me and that guy, we never dated or anything, but we did remain friends, and he is genuinely one of the kindest, sweetest human beings who really loved every single person he met that I'd ever met, and like everyone always said that about him. And so it really, really, really hit me really hard when that happened. That year I also stopped going to my dad's. I stopped talking to my dad briefly because of some things that were happening that I'm not going to go into because that's his personal life, and he's done a lot of growing and healing since then, so I don't want to dwell on it. But and then so I stopped going to that Southern Baptist church at my dad's house, and there's a lot of things changing. And then my grandma died, and then someone else died in my family, and my great uncle, and it got, at that point in time, I was still like really numb and empty, but I think little pieces of the pain were starting to come in, but it was still pretty empty for the most part. And then I went to Taiwan on a mission trip before my junior year. And I came back and I was telling my mom, I'm moving to Taiwan. And my mom told me, you're not going anywhere without me. And so she started applying for jobs in the international school system. And we ended up living in China my senior year of high school. And I went to the international school she worked at. And that is when my world was flipped upside down. I was stripped of my environment, my multiple environments that I had been raised in and had built my identity to fit into. And without that, I didn't really know completely who I was. And it was like a lot of questioning, and I felt such intense guilt because I was starting to question my religion. But like a big part of, I don't know, Christianity did some fucked up things to my mental state as a kid, and like my belief systems about myself, and so I was battling that. Like, it was while I was in China that I realized some of the things that I had gained from Christianity were really hurting me. Like, the intense amount of guilt and shame that, like, I constantly felt about, like, what about that one thing that I did? Or, oh, God, it's just so many things that you can't, I don't know, I just felt really guilty. And then once I started to feel good from exploring other ideas, I was overwhelmed with so much guilt and shame. And I couldn't trust my own, I think that part of my anxiety and my like unable to trust my own thoughts was kind of from that too, because Christianity taught me at a really young age, not like Jesus and God, but like the church taught me at a really young age to not trust myself, that my instincts are sinful and I should turn them, like I should deny my instincts, and I should not trust my gut feelings. That these things are unreliable is what I learned from that. And that really, really fucked with my head as an adult, like as a high schooler and adult. I really had to unlearn that because I was really uncomfortable with myself. Like every part of myself made me feel bad, and that's just horrible. that's a horrible reality to be existing in. So after all that questioning and stuff, I went on my very last day on my way home, the day that I moved home from China. I was in the plane and I looked out the window at, I think I was flying out of Beijing, and I looked at Beijing and I was just like, I don't believe there's no way all these people are going to hell just because they were born here. There's no part of my being that believes that. And I just realized in that moment that I did not believe in hell. And that was kind of the first time I had been questioning and playing with other ideas and other spiritualities, but that was the first time when I was like, oh shit, I don't believe in hell. I genuinely don't believe God's gonna send all those people to hell, all those kind, loving people with their communities in their... China is incredible and the people are incredible, and I don't believe God's just gonna send them all to hell because they were born in a place that doesn't really have Christianity. And so then I came home and I told the universe that I wanted to understand the secrets of the universe. And then I thought I was going crazy for a period of time, which was a couple of things. It was me, those empath and sensitive abilities that I turned off when I was a kid got turned back on by a combination of like smoking weed and living on my own for the first time and like exploring new religions and opening myself up, telling the universe, hey, I want to know the secrets. I want to understand how this shit works. Once I was sensitive to the energies around me again, and I didn't know that I was, I didn't know what they were, it was terrifying. Everything felt horrible and terrifying, and I wasn't sleeping, and I was too scared to turn my light off at nighttime. I would get this feeling, this sensation that someone was like right behind me about to stab me in the back. And these are feelings, all these feelings that I were getting at the time that were terrifying, that I was like, oh my God, I have schizophrenia too. Like, this is it. I'm gonna have the same like life. I have schizophrenia too. But I really didn't. I just am a sensitive person and had shut that off for like 8 years. And so when it came back, it was very overwhelming and scary. And now I know that when I feel, it doesn't make me feel the terror like it used to. Like, I feel like someone's standing right behind me, but there's no like gonna stab you in the knife part of it. But I know that that is 99.9% of the time just my brother being there, or any spirit, but usually it's my brother. For me personally, because he's my like main spirit guide. And then I got this book about manifestation, and I didn't really know what to think about it. I was kind of like, okay, sure, this kind of sounds fake. Like, I feel like if you could just manifest shit, then I guess that's too easy. Like, kind of sounds fake, whatever, but I'm interested. And then one day I had this song, this tune, this little melody from a tune stuck in my head from a work, or while I was at work. It wasn't a full song. Like, it was just one little melody from a song stuck in my head that I couldn't remember what it was, and it was driving me insane all day at work. And so I just decided, okay, let's try this manifestation thing. And so I did what the book told me to do, which is, first of all, you just believe it. So what I did is, in my head, I just stated, I believe that within 24 hours, I'm gonna hear the song that this is from, and I'm gonna be able to know what song it is. And then, after believing it and stating it, I just instantly let go of it and forgot about it. And then later that night, I'm at a friend's house, and we're listening to records, and he was playing Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, which I hadn't listened to Pink Floyd since I was, like, a kid. And he flips the record and plays Money, and it's the the bass line from Money had been stuck in my head all day. And I also knew that song because of my brother. He loved that song, and it was the first song that he learned to play on the bass. And so once I realized what song it was really an emotional thing too. But I really feel like my brother was, you know, my spirit guide, helping me learn to manifest by putting that song in my head so that I would do that. And during this time, I came to a lot of my own beliefs on my own just by like thinking about things. My mental health was really low, but I was also feeling grief for the first time in 7 years, since my like 7 years worth of grief that I had never felt, and also trying to learn how to be it like sensitive again. My mental health was really low, but I like there were a lot of things that I just kind of like started to feel like I believed that this, you know, like I just would have a feeling about something. Like I remember one of the things was specifically that I was like, you know, I think that probably when it comes to death, we just experience whatever idea of death we have when we die. And so like the only people who really experience hell are the people who believe in hell and believe that they deserve to go to hell. And then a couple of years later, I was reading Dolores Cannon's works, and that idea was totally confirmed there. And there were just a ton of other things that I thought I was the only one who'd ever, I mean, I didn't necessarily think that I was the only one, but I just didn't know anybody else believed in things that I was like coming to on my own at the time. And then later I started finding on the internet and like through books, I found like, oh, like there's a bunch of people who believe in this stuff too. So then in 2017, there's a couple things that have happened since then that have still impacted my spiritual journey, because the thing is, like, my spiritual beliefs are constantly growing and evolving as I'm learning and experiencing new things. And one thing that I experienced that definitely kind of opened up my mind in a lot of ways to new things was I took acid in 2017. And that's when I got this whole, like, we're all connected, we're all the same thing, we're all one strand of energy that's just experiencing itself over and over and over again. I just felt all of that. I felt connected to everyone and everything. And I felt, before I took acid, I was very, like, I loved nature and I loved being in nature. And I was like, oh yeah, that plant is pretty. Now it's like every plant, even the ones that are like aesthetically ugly to most people, are like, or that would be seen as like ugly, are like overwhelmingly beautiful to me. And I feel so intensely connected to like every piece of nature. And also I was terrified of the dark my entire life until I took acid for the first time. And it just like, I was just standing there outside, like looking around, like it just made sense in my head. Like this, it was just like how, like it's the same thing. The same things are there in the daytime and the nighttime. You just can't see as much of it, but the same things are there. And it just like clicked in my head, and I was just never afraid of the dark after that, never again. And so I do want to put a disclaimer in here about psychedelics. Like, please be careful if you want to take them. Don't use them as, you know, if you need mental help, like if you have mental health issues, like seek help for those professionally. And if you're taking any kind of medication and you want to try any type of drug, always, always, always do research about your type of medication and how it will play with that drug, because really dangerous things can happen when drugs and medications mix. And I will say that although psychedelics have helped me in the past with, I've always had intense spiritual experiences on them, and I've also had really big like breakthroughs on my mental health during, while I was taking them or on them, I'm not going to recommend you do the same. Like I said, seek professional help if you need it. And also I will say that, like, this is something that I would do like once in a blue moon. This is not a frequent thing. And that is the disclaimer that I wanted to put out there. But I will say that psychedelics are a part of, I believe that they, it's almost like you just kind of, you get behind the veil a little bit. You're like still here and on the other side at the same time. And I know a lot of people realize that they are manifesting their realities while they're tripping, because it just, it becomes really obvious. You say something and it will like it becomes cartoonishly obvious that we are living in a projection that we created, and that we are creating everything around us all the time, except for other like life forms, but they just are us, you know? So yeah, I think I need to make a new voice recording pretty soon. Oh no, we got some time still. So then, and the next thing that happened is, I didn't know witches were real for a very long time. And I remember one time I had these two roommates, these two girls, and we were trying to figure out what to name our house, because we wanted to have some cute name, like, and we decided on House of Love, which is a great name, but I wanted to call it The Coven, and I just remember during that conversation sitting there thinking, like, man, wouldn't it be cool to, like, be a real witch? Like, isn't that just crazy? Like, wouldn't that just be crazy to be a real witch and, like, have a coven? And then I'm, like, looking at my friends, and they hated that name, and so we called it the House of Love, which I do like that name because I love love. But then my very next roommate was a real-life witch, and she had been studying witchcraft for like years, and was so full of information and taught me a lot. That's where I learned about like astrology and tarot cards and pendulums and all this kind of stuff. She gave me a book, or she let me borrow this book called The Power of the Witch by Laurie Cabot, I don't know. And highly recommend that book. It goes into the history of witchcraft, the science of witchcraft, like basics of it, the like meditations, healing meditations you can do for people, little spells like moon rituals, and like what all of those things mean, which really, you know, the moon rituals are all about like manifesting in your life and cleansing in your life, like cleansing the things you don't want and manifesting what you do and connecting to yourself. So that was a really big thing, because obviously like tarot cards are a big part of my life and stuff now. So the next thing that happened to me in affecting my spirituality is something that I have not spoken to So the next thing that happened in my spirituality and in that growth process that really affected me, something that I haven't talked about with many people at all, only the ones who are like kind of well close to me have heard about this. So if you're someone who's in my life and you're just now hearing about this for the first time, I apologize, but you probably know why I didn't talk about this once you hear what it is. But I got pregnant And I, my boyfriend, who I've been with him now for 2.5 years, we were like a year in at to our relationship at this time, and that was wild. It was really wild. I was 20, and I was not ready to have a kid. I had just finished my freshman year of college. Like, I was not ready. But, however, I will say, I understood a lot about nature and my, like, role here as a person with a womb, and that connection to nature with the womb, like, it's crazy. And I think this actually happened a little before I started to really get into witchcraft myself, but I think it was good timing for that, because a lot of witchcraft had to deal with, like, femininity and the moon, and, like, used to, during the tribe days, like, all the women's periods were synced up to the moon, and it was a holy time, and that kind of stuff, you know? I understand, I used to think that shit was, like, really stupid. My mom, you know, is kind of a hippie, so I used to think that shit was really stupid when I was a kid, and then now I, like, really get it. I really deeply, deeply get how, like, having a womb and both, you know, reproductive organs are needed to make a baby, but, like, growing it inside of you, being the incubator for it, like, it just, I really don't fully know even how to talk about what I experienced at this time, because my hormones were crazy. It was kind of hell because of that, and also, the state I live in didn't make that super easy either. But, yeah, like, and I'm reluctant to use the term womanhood here, because I know that women does not equate having a womb. But, like, I can't think of any other word, so I'm going to use it. But I don't mean, I mean people with wombs, like, and you don't have to be a woman. But for lack of a better term, I understand womanhood and in nature and our role as this, like, divine creator power. And, like, I've talked about before, I believe we're all God. But the role of having this, like, monthly cycle that is tied with the moon, that, like, cleanses toxins from your body, but then also can, like, create a whole new life, is magic. It's fucking magic. It really is. Like, we are the magic in this world. We are the fairies. And, like, I believe in the fae as, like, fairies, leprechauns, elves, those types of things. I believe those are nature protector spirits that throughout history occasionally manifest to humans. But, like, magic, all the magical, like, fairies and that kind of stuff, like, that's us. We are the magic. And I think I really understood that while I was pregnant, which I also didn't know that I wanted to have kids until I got pregnant, which sucked a little because I also knew that I didn't want to have kids at the time. But it was really beautiful. I felt a presence of a soul. I did, even though the thing on the sonogram, like, you could barely see it next to the IUD, looked huge next to it on the sonogram, which, if you don't know, IUDs are tiny. It literally was, like, smaller than a piece of rice, which, so I'm, like, not saying the word baby on purpose, because I've never seen a baby that looks like a fucking piece of rice. But I'm sorry for that. That was a little crude. I'm sorry. So, what was I saying? We are the magic. And womanhood and motherhood. Oh, and that fact is that, yeah, I do want to be a mother. And I really didn't think I did until I got pregnant. It just kind of, I felt like, opened me up to a deeper level of connecting with the universe and myself and the other souls here that I had never really opened up to before. And then I dealt with postpartum depression after having an abortion because all of those hormones left my body really quickly, and also had to, like, grieve. I didn't really grieve. Like, I have a lot of experience with grief. I didn't grieve in the same way as I do, like, a normal death. But I did grieve the possibility of a baby. Meanwhile, my last remaining grandparent has cancer. This is all going on at once. And, so there was this, which my grandma and most of my family didn't know about the abortion or anything like that. They did not know that that was going on during that time. And they might if they decide to listen to this podcast. But so my grandma had cancer. My grandma did not do chemo. She did a plant-based cancer treatment thing that has been around since the 60s, and it, like, has, you know, they've done lots of testing on it, and it is proven to, like, have a really high chances of helping heal your body of cancer, and it does zero damage, which chemo has, like, really low percent chance of actually doing you any good, and a 100% chance that it's going to ruin your body, for anyone out there that didn't know that fact. So that's why my grandma didn't do chemo, and they told her that she had 5 months to live, and then she lived for like a year instead, or like they're like, you have cancer, you have 5 months to live, and then 5 months later they're like, you have 5 months to live, and then another 5 months later they're like, 2 months, and then 2 months later is about when all this is going down, and she was like, finally, actually sick, like they said that she was gonna be, which she probably only would have been because of the chemo they were gonna give her, but whatever. So my grandma is sick, and I am going on a trip out of state, and my dad texts me before I leave that I, when I get back, I need to come see my grandma as soon as possible because they don't think that she's gonna make it more than a week. And I was like, oh shit. And then that was like right before I got on the plane, I get that text, and then I'm on the plane and I'm reading the book The Power of the Witch at this time, and I am in the part of it learning about healing and doing like healing for people and how to heal people with energy. And I was reading this little healing meditation, and then it says at the end of it, like, go ahead and give it a try, and if there's anyone you know that's sick, it'd be a good person to try it out on. Because the first thing that you do is, like, try to detect any illness or issue or pain. And so I tried it out on my grandma, like, everything it said to do in the book, and I felt really, like, I felt this feeling like it was working. And so I did it again every single night while I was on the trip before I went to sleep. And then when I got back, I texted my dad. I was like, hey, how's grandma? Do I need to come? And he was like, oh, you can take your time. She actually, like, recovered and she's, like, fine. And I was like, oh, okay. And so then once I finally got down there to see her, I was talking to her alone for a little bit, and at this point in time, because she had gotten really close to dying, she was kind of really in and out of the 3D and the astral plane and the spirit world, and like would be present and talking to us, and then all of a sudden would be talking about something that none of us could see, So she was sitting there and she was telling me how she had almost died, basically, and like how she was about to, she had been in a place where she had been ready to give up. All her energy had been drained. She had been ready to give up and die, I guess, move on. And then she felt, but she said that every night, she's at this point in time, she was spending most of her time asleep rather than awake. And she said that every night she could see all of the prayers from the pastor from her church and the church that I had gone to, and like her family and the people that were praying for her and sending her love and healing. She could see those prayers coming in every night from the place that she was in while she was not sleeping. And then she said, she told me that one night after she like saw all her little prayers, all her little lights, all her little sparks of energy, and then this pink light came and like took over her whole body and then gave her all of her energy back and then went away. And she said she felt her all of her energy, all of her vitality, her strength restored. And then she said the second night it came back again, this pink light. So she reached out and grabbed it to see who it was. And when she did, it turned into me. And she was holding me and picking me up and throwing me in the air and spinning me around. And she said that I had given her all of her strength back. And she was like, this light gave me all my strength back. And then it was you. And then she asked me if I had done anything. So, and I wasn't going to be like, oh yeah, grandma, I'm doing witchcraft. But because technically it is, but also like, it's really similar to like Reiki and a lot of things that are not really considered witchcraft by a lot of people. But I did tell her, I was like, I did these healing meditations that I've been learning, and I tried them out on you. I didn't know how it was going to work. And she, like, I started to explain the healing, the meditation that I had done for her. And she cut me off and, like, grabbed my arm and looked me in the eyes and told me, I don't know what you did, but you saved my life. And that was the most intense moment of my entire life. It still like makes my heart race to think about. I was just like, okay, guess I really am a witch now, because that shit worked and I really didn't expect it to. Like, I really did not. I mean, like, I expected it to work, because you have to expect it to work for it to work at all. That's how energy things work. It's really rooted in belief. But I did not expect my grandma to ever be able to tell that I had done something or to see any of that, let alone tell me that I saved her life. And then she went on to tell me her, basically like her dying wish was that she was like, I just wish that like what will come of this experience of me having cancer, me going through all of this, I know my time's coming to an end soon, regardless of the cancer or not. And she's told me that her dying wish was that what would come of all of this was that somehow someone would learn about this plant-based cancer treatment, alternative to chemo, because of her experiences. And she looked at me and I was, you know, I took that in, but then like a little while later, it like really struck me that like no one in my family, they all thought she was crazy for wanting to like do that cancer treatment instead of chemo, instead of what the doctors were telling her. So it's probably not going to be any of them telling the world about this plant-based cancer treatment. And it just really felt like she passed on her dying wish to me to tell people about these other options besides chemo. And the book that talks about all of this, for anyone out there that's listening that's interested, is called You Can Outsmart Your Cancer. And it's like all about this type of cancer treatment that's been around since the 60s. And maybe I'll put in the description all of the books that I've referenced in this episode, because I don't know the name of the author off the top of my head, or the name of the actual plant thingy, because it's like some chemical name, because it's like a plant chemical. I don't remember what it's called. But so, which that whole experience was really important to me. And I also, I was getting into like learning how to use different essential oils for like, minor healing around the home. And I had like started making my own burn salves and like basically a Neosporin thing, and making, like essential oil blends for congestion and that kind of stuff, and using it on a minor scale. And I was like really getting into that at that time. And then my grandma went and told me, is like, oh, you thought the only like natural healing you were gonna get into is essential oils? Like, no, you have to tell people about this cancer treatment, which is a big, I mean, I don't really feel like it's my responsibility. I feel like she gave me the option to choose to do that or not. But it's a big thing that I don't know how I'm gonna spread that news, but I'm gonna, I guess. But also, that experience just really gave me the confidence that I never fully had before in myself and my powers as a little mini god here on Earth, my ability to create and heal and love and really everything. This is also a big part of my spiritual beliefs that I guess that I didn't talk about. Everything is always affecting everything else. Always. Your thoughts and your words are all have energies that are affecting your reality, and they can affect other people too, which is why it's important to be careful about that kind of stuff. So, but also, like, anyways, so then after that, my grandma did pass away, like, I want to say like 2 months later, or a month and a half later, or something like that. And the day of her funeral I was at my grandma's funeral when I found out that Mac Miller died, and I was a really big fan of his. And I was prepared to grieve my grandma. Like, you're my last remaining grandparent. I have been prepared for this since my brother killed himself in 2010. I've been prepared for anyone to die. I'm way too prepared. It's really unhealthy. Still working on it. But I was prepared to grieve my grandma. And for some reason, finding out about Mac Miller's death while I was at her funeral, just like, it came in like I got punched in the face from a side angle that I hadn't even considered. Like, and so it was rough. And then I actually really did have to dive into my grief. And it wasn't until after my grandma died and after I had the abortion that I fully faced my grief from my brother. And like, all this was in 2018. So it wasn't that long ago when I, for the first time, genuinely actually faced my grief with my brother and actually felt all those emotions. And my mental health was pretty low during that time because I felt like a bottomless pit of nothing but sadness for like 6 months. That's what it was like to face my grief. Because it also wasn't just my brother, like it was a whole cast of people. But I mean, really, I mean, the one, my brother is the one that hit me the most. And I, in that time, I also learned to, consciously communicate with my brother and with the spirits who, my spirit guides and this, my family and loved ones who are on the other side. He's always been with me and he's always been giving me messages and guidance and that kind of stuff. But it wasn't until this point in my life when I really was able to consciously go in and be aware of all that stuff and really intentional. And then the last big thing, 2019 was a shit show. We all know that. But I had to learn about boundaries in 2019. And I learned a lot about, I had this like very short relationship in my life, this like very short-lived soulmate connection that was very intense and very traumatic for the both of us by the end of it, and very triggering of both of our traumas, which afterwards I went in and like it, this whole thing triggered a bunch of traumas that I had honestly forgot about. It was a bunch of stuff that like, yeah, I've dealt with my grief, I've dealt with all the big stuff, but here's all these like other little things that you are unaware are still eating away at you, and they had to be triggered for me to finally be able to see that they are still eating away at me. And I had to, so I learned a lot about physical boundaries, and like boundaries in relationships and how to set them and how to keep them in place and to make sure that they are like stayed in place, and how to like dip when they are being completely like consistently disrespected, you know, your boundaries. So but meantime I was also learning how to energetically set boundaries, which as an empath or a highly sensitive person is hugely, hugely, hugely important, and is probably the single most like important thing in my mental health, like that's ever like really made a huge difference, and that is something that I do every single day. I don't do it every single day because some days I don't think about these kinds of things, but I do it almost every single day, and it's not even like I do it almost every single day because if I forget to, there will be a certain point in my day where I'm like, oh my God, I'm going crazy. I have to sit down and do this meditation. Because I am clearly like in crazy because I didn't do it this morning. But my therapist taught me how to, I guess I didn't say this. I started therapy like right around the time right before my grandma died, like a couple weeks before she died, actually. Or maybe like a month before, something like that. So I was in therapy when I was really facing all that grief and stuff, and working through that, processing it. And then I was in therapy through all this boundary stuff. But this is the point in my life where I always thought being an empath was like stupid. Like, oh yeah, sure, you can feel other people's feelings. Like, that's gay, bro. Like, but once I had my once my therapist explained it to me, I was like, oh, ooh, because a lot of people also talk about empathy and like, or not really empathy, is just like having empathy. I'm talking about being an empath, which is a different thing than just having empathy. Being an empath is kind of like not having any boundaries energetically. You are a sponge. You absorb other people's energies and emotions, and then you hold on to them and you retain them, and they build up, and your body probably hurts a lot, and you're always wondering why you like feel this way and why, yeah, where are these things coming from? It probably isn't you. Like, you are absorbing all these energies from all these other people around you, and you like don't feel any sense of self because your energy gets kind of like lost in the chaos, and like it's really a lack of boundaries. And if you are trying to do healing or trying to do any kind of help, even if it's just like being there for a friend, if you're in the place, like if someone's really sad and going through something, if you just get the same amount, like if you just are in their sadness and you just feel their sadness, you're only going to be able to send that energy back to them because that's the energy that you're currently occupying. You're just gonna you're like almost gonna like magnify their sadness if you're just in it too. So you have to be able to protect yourself from being like absorbing other energies. And like seriously, this has impacted my anxiety more than anything else has. My therapist taught me this thing where you sit, this little meditation, you sit with your eyes closed with your palms facing up in your lap, you breathe in really deeply, and you picture this blue light being drawn up from deep within you, kind of like a well. And it's kind of filling your body, this really deep blue light. And then when you exhale, you picture this little, the light leaves your body and becomes like a little flame in your hands. And then each inhale, you pull up more light, and each exhale, the flame gets bigger. And what this light is your true essence, your energy, you alone, like your higher self, your soul. And you repeat that, and then once the flame, each time you draw more light and exhale, the flame gets bigger. And once it is large and kind of like big and in front of you, you do it again, you know, draw more light on, but then it's the flame starts to like become an orb around you and like consume your whole body. And I always ask that this be done correctly and for the good of all. And I always ask that this, it like, or I set, it's kind of like I set an intention that this orb will protect me from absorbing anyone's energies, but I'll still be receptive to them. But it will keep me, it will protect me from any harmful or negative energies. And then it will keep my energy strengthened, so I will be able to be connected to my higher self and have that like conscience, you know, voice. And like be able to remain connected to myself. And yeah, I think that a lot of people have, well, I know a lot of people learned about boundaries in 2019. And whether you were learning how to set your own boundaries or how to respect other people's boundaries or both, like those are really like that energy boundary that I learned how to do, like this really was important for me spiritually, because like, yeah, if I'm just as anxious as you, I'm only gonna make you more anxious. And a big part of my spirituality is like wanting to help people and read their tarot cards and give them guidance or read their numerology and stuff. So I have to be able to, and also those are all energy exchanges, so I have to be able to protect myself from being drained of energy during those times, and just in general, because that can happen. Some people are people who are They don't know to look inside themselves for answers and energy that they drain, so they drain others. And I know that I've been a person who's been draining of energy before. We all have been that person. And then the very end of 2019, I kind of started finding other people in mass amounts on the internet who are believe in the same thing as me. So it's cool. I feel like I'm on the path to like really finding my tribe, my like spiritual tribe. And I hope that, you know, I think a lot of people in the collective are now, or that kind of a lot of people are moving towards what they're truly passionate about at the current moment, what they really want to be doing, which is why I started this podcast. This is one of the things that I'm moving towards, that I'm passionate about. So yeah, that's me. That's my like life story pretty much, and my spirituality clusterfuck. And I don't know. I hope you enjoyed it. You can, if you have questions, I think that there's like a way to comment on this thing when I post it. If you have questions, you can always comment or find me on Instagram at Love Horse Studios. Horse like the animal. And you can find me on YouTube under the same name, or TikTok, or Twitter. So I'll see you guys next week with a guest and hopefully some better podcasting skills. But I hope you guys have a really good week, and see you next time.